Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Good Friday, everybody. Welcome in. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, Nick Kieser here with you. Hope you're having a wonderful start to your day. We got a big show planned. Sean Henry, president and CEO of the Predators, is going to join us for his weekly visit here in a few minutes. And also, Ran Carthon, the Titans general manager, will be introduced today at 12 o'clock press conference. You'll hear that on these airwaves. But what do we expect to hear from him today? Our show presented by Hair Club. Love your hair, live your life, creating custom hair loss solutions for men and women. Michelle, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Chase. Doing great. I have my 5 million drinks here.
Yeah, you do have a lot.
I had to bring all my snacks and my laptop into the studio. I'm great. It's Friday.
It is Friday.
It's a big day. And then we get a great weekend of football.
Yeah.
I'm so excited just to watch these games this weekend. You don't have to do the double screen or anything.
No.
One game, you get the 3:30, you get the 7.
You go find you a bar and just post up.
Post up.
There you go. But a lot to get into today. Joe Rexroad going to come back and join us at 10. So we'll get his thoughts on what to expect from Ran Carthon. Jared has made his list of questions that he wants answered today. And look, they're valid questions. I don't know how much detail we're really going to get.
Probably not much.
Because, I mean, the thing is, like, everybody goes to the, okay, well, what's going to happen if Vrabel and Carthon disagree on something? I don't think they really know the answer to that until it actually happens.
I mean,
I don't think you can sit there and go, well, here's what we discussed in the interview process. If Mike wants linebacker A and Rand wants a safety B, then what we're going to do is we're going to have a series of tie-breaking procedures where we flip for it, and then finally, if we can't decide, we'll call Amy and she'll decide. I mean, we're not going to have that.
And you think about when you interview for a job or something, they ask you, how do you deal with conflict? Of course you're going to portray the best, you know, version of yourself and how you would handle it from an outsider.
I just always say I'm right and you're wrong.
From an outsider looking in. But, you know, they're not going to know the answer to that until they cross that bridge, until they are – proposed with a player and they disagree on it, and you cross that bridge when you get there. But I think if you just sometimes I feel like people are like, well, what's the answer right now? We want to know who has final say. But, you know, they're not going to say today, well, okay, so if I want this person, you know, and Mike doesn't, then Mike will get final say. I mean, that's just not going to happen today. He just got to the building, looks like yesterday, with the videos coming out and everything, which that was a nice welcome, the round of applause, and everybody standing there. I do wonder what happened when the cameras turned off. Did everybody just stop and then walk back to their
I have some thoughts
cubicles
on that. Let's start with one of those, because the Titans have released a series of different videos with Ran Carthon, and this one kind of made me laugh. This is him getting the call from Amy Adams Strong.
I'm taking my phone calls. I just called you.
I was on the phone with my brother, and I saw the Houston number. I was like, could this be? I don't want to get stuck talking to someone I don't want to talk to.
Hey, how do you feel about being the Titan general manager?
Oh, I would love to.
Well, we'd love to have you.
Oh, my God, you got my heart beating.
Well, mine's beating, too.
That's Amy Adams Strunk and Ran Carthon. When he got the phone call. Now, you know, I mean, I think that's a cool idea from the social media team. I think there might have been a little acting involved, if I'm just being honest. But I don't know if that was really the moment that it happened. But I laughed at the Houston number, because I think he thought it was the Texans.
Oh, I think that's
hilarious. Why I kind of think there was a little acting involved, that they threw that in there of like, oh, that's a nice little pot shot at the Texans. That's good.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I didn't think so on that front. I thought, you know, hey, we're gonna call you, we're gonna set it up so you get like the real reaction. But
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't matter if it was or it wasn't. It just that kind of stuff. It's hard sometimes to get the real raw emotion, and you know, I could tell he was like, whoa, wow, this is actually happening. But I think he probably already knew, you know, that had a good idea that it was going to be coming.
Yeah,
And then to your point, everybody like standing there clapping like, all right, we're done. All right, later.
I would have loved for somebody to keep rolling and just see somebody go, okay, here they come. And it's like a surprise party when somebody walks in the door. Everybody hide. Okay, now surprise. Yeah. Or like, everybody start clapping. I do think the phone.
Where was Rabes? I didn't
see
Rabes.
Yeah, that's what everybody said. I mean, he probably was. I don't know.
They're probably going to play up this the first time they meet is today. You know, just this whole like.
Oh, they've definitely met
the
before.
Embrace. Now, I know. I'm going with the theme of like them trying to play up all this stuff.
Yeah, I think that's just social media in general. Like, you just try to make the best. I mean, in any person, in any organization.
Well, I'm sick of social media, if I'm just being honest with you. Yeah. I'm tired of trolls. I'm tired of having to use the mute button and just, like, all that stuff.
Well, so. It's the you know, the best version of everything is on there, right? Mm, you know,
something like that.
Everything perfect, so.
Keyboard warriors. But, yeah, so they've obviously – and this is a big hire for them because Amy Adams Strunk – made a statement when she fired John Robinson mid-season. And so now that you've made that decision, you know, you're going to have to make this decision and make it be the right decision. And look, we've talked to people and I everything appears they've made the right decision, but we got to see how it's all going to play out. I'm very curious to hear him today. He seems like an easygoing guy. Similar to John. John was very down to earth. I want to see how, you know, Floyd used to always bring up that, you know, to be in that role, you got to be able to say a lot without saying anything at all. And that's in, you know, I think Vrabel can do that. We'll see, you know, how Rand Carthon does. I mean, there's some that'll give you, you know, more than others. But I'm curious. I know I'm going to go. You're going. A lot of people are going today. To the press conference because it truly is a new era of the Titans.
No, I know. Usually there's about 15 of us, I guess I could say, who go there on a regular basis. And I'm like, I got to go right after this. It's going to be packed in there today. I got to get a seat. So I have a feeling there will be a lot of media outlets there today to hear.
I'll lurk in the back. I'm cool with that.
To hear Rand Carthon's, you know, first comments and everything. I'm assuming Mike Vrabel will also be there. And I actually feel like maybe Amy Adams Strunk would be there after we saw her
yesterday. I think
she'll
be there, but I don't think she will take questions.
Yeah, so we'll see, you know, just a couple hours away. But it's exciting, and I think the part that you mentioned that Floyd used to say, you know, you have to be able to say a lot without saying anything at all. And I think that's one thing that I've learned and observed from Mike Vrabel over, you know, the past year and a half that I've been covering the team is, you know, he knows how to answer a question with kind of dodging what the actual question is. Which is a skill that a lot of people who speak in public need to have because a lot of times, you know, when you're a head coach, when you're a general manager, you know, you're not going to give the raw truth.
Right. I'd be curious, and I don't know if anybody is going to go down this road. I mean, I know who could. There are some that could. But if I'm Rand Carthon and I'm going through the interview process, because, you know, they ask you questions and then you need to ask them questions.
Mm-hmm.
I would have asked Amy Adams Strunk, why did you let go of your GM in the middle of the season when you had a winning record and you were leading the division? I think that's something that I'd want to know before I took a job. Now, obviously, he took the job and we'll see. And it in the grand scheme of things now, it's what's done is done. But I know if I'm going to work for a company, I'm going to ask some tough questions like that. I want to know what I'm getting myself into.
Yeah.
I'd be curious if that would have come up.
I think it's, you know, definitely a question that probably came up in his head, you know, and a lot of other candidates had heads mm-hmm. when they were in this interviewing process. And it's like you toe the line between I want to know, but also there's 32 of these positions, you know, and do I even want to go there? You know, do I even want to bring up the past or do I just want to, you know, clean slate? This is me coming in fully a new GM. New mindset, coming from an outside organization. Yeah, I'm sure you want to know.
Yeah.
But is it worth it? I don't know.
Well, and I think, you know, this is kind of advice to anybody when you're, you know, interviewing for a job. Yes, it's a step up. It's a promotion. You know, it's his first shot at being a general manager. But, you know, you have to you have to do your research. You have to do your due diligence to make sure that it's truly going to be the right fit for you. You may not know until you actually get there, but there are certain questions that I think you should ask when going through the process to make sure, okay, if I pick up my life and move across the country, which is what he's doing, to take this job, you know, is this an organization that I feel like, okay, I can be here for a good while? You know, John was here 5 years, 6 years. But I know if I was in his shoes, I would have asked. And I would have done it in a respectful way. It wouldn't have been a gotcha. You know, I would have been like, hey, look, you elected to make a decision middle of the season. I'm curious of what led you down that road and things that you saw that you don't even necessarily have to make it about John. It's just what led you to that decision. I think stuff like that's important.
Or, you know, you pose it as, what would you like to see that, you know, caused the ending? Or what would you like to see moving forward as a general manager, yeah, right? Obviously, you decided to turn the page. But I get where you're coming from. But you also look at it, too, and you think of opportunities. You could never have an opportunity again. You just never know, right? There's literally 32, one of the most coveted jobs, I would say, in America. I mean, the NFL is king, right?
Mm-hmm.
32 positions. And, yes, you have to know. You have to ask questions and things like that. But and when you get an opportunity like that, who's saying no to it?
We will continue to discuss this as we go along today. But coming up next, we'll talk to Sean Henry, the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators. He joins us every Friday at 9:15. We'll do that next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic. Nick Keyser here with you. Predators back in action tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena as they will take on the Los Angeles Kings. And every Friday at 9:15, we say hello to the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators, Sean Henry. Sean, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic. Looking forward to being back at the rink tomorrow night as the rest of January the games will be played at Bridgestone Arena. I know that always makes you excited to have Smashville load up Bridgestone Arena.
Oh, there's no doubt. You know, it's nice to close it out before the All-Star break and game break. You know, three at home, ideally the right thing happens, and we go into that break pretty happy.
So last night was Colton Sisson's 500th career NHL game. He's played all of those for the Nashville Predators, and I was talking to Pete Weber in pregame about him, the birthday boy, Pete Weber. And it's hard to believe that it's been 500 games for Colton Sissons, but he's become a core member of this team, a guy that can really play up and down the lineup, and just one of those type guys that you always want in your locker room. But it floored me that it had already been 500 games. How about you?
You know, it's funny. You know, games go by slowly, but seasons go by quickly, and I think that's a great example of it. I knew he was approaching that plateau. But until you actually see it, you're like, oh, my gosh, 500 games. And that's just an incredible accomplishment. But I remember back, I don't even know, I guess 16, 17, 15, 16, whatever it was, you know, we were talking about, you know, we always look in 3, 5, and 10-year windows for the team as you look out for the roster. And I'll never forget one of our scouts and David Poyle were talking about, you know, Colton and what he could do. You know, he could move up and down the lineup, but he was a leader. Always going to be strong defensively, always going to be a great two-way forward. Always going to be you know, strong on the faceoffs, but all they kept talking about was his leadership, his leadership, his leadership. And you know, you look at the past 500 games, and he sure does show it. And remember what he did in the 2017 run? He was our number one center at 22 years of age or whatever he was. Yeah, he really did put the team on his back and propelled us into the finals.
So let's test your Predators knowledge here. What do Colton
Sisson? Oh, great! You'll like test in the morning.
Yeah, I think you'll get this. What do Colton Sisson's?
What am I doing now? My gosh! Go ahead.
Well, I'll help you. What do Colton Sisson's, Matias Ekholm, Roman Josi, and Philip Forsberg all have in common?
All of their NHL games have been played with one team.
That is true. That is true, and they all played for all three head coaches. And they're the only guys that can say that.
There you go.
So, fun little fact.
They probably have a lot of things in common. They all like coffee in the morning.
Who
guys.
Doesn't?
They're all generous guys. They're all good people. Yeah.
All played in a Stanley Cup final. I mean, they all have that.
I really like those. I like the questions with multiple answers where you can't be wrong. So, thank you for that.
See, that's why I set you up that way. I got your back. You know that. Sean Henry
always
is.
Always do, always will.
Always will. Sean Henry is with us. So, something cool that I got to do the other day, and I appreciate Kevin Wilson and Bill Wickett for setting it up. I got to go spend time with your general manager and just sit down with David Poile and record an interview that you'll hear next week on these airwaves. And we talked a lot about the now, about the past and his career, fun things like that. But what came up was collaboration, which is a word that we use a lot these days. And I brought up the collaboration between you two and that you obviously have a big job as team president. And he has a big job as general manager, but how well you guys work together and as well as other members of the Predators organization. Obviously he was very complimentary of you, but what's it been like over the last decade or more, you getting to work side by side with the winningest GM in the National Hockey League?
You know, and you and I have talked about this quite a bit in the past, and, you know, I don't want to try to build David up to be Paul Bunyan, you know, but he's just wonderful to work with. I mean, he really, really is. And what I always appreciate about David, even before we worked together, and it just became so much better once we started, which a lot of times you see someone from afar, and you only see the good things, and then you work with them, and you're like, oh, it's okay. But David is just the opposite. You see all these wonderful things, and when you get a chance to work with them, it's even better. But David Poile loves our game. And he's always had a viewpoint that the better the game is, the better the Predators can be. But in the end, you have to protect the game. You have to work on the game. You have to contribute to the game. And because of that, he sees all facets of it. And I've always been drawn to someone like that, that he looks so far beyond just the team, just the roster, just what's next, and really looks at what's our place in the league. How do we help the league grow and evolve? And, you know, the end result is you transform this city into a hockey city, first and foremost, probably one of the best hockey cities in America. And it's because of that overall view of look out for the game and the Preds will, you know, climb with it. And I was fortunate, you know, kind of grew up in the business working with the Pistons, who always had that view. Everyone in the organization was responsible for everything in the organization. You know, whether you were the food and beverage guy, parking lot guy, sales guy, or GM, you looked at what we're doing, how we're doing it, how we're impacting people, how do you move it forward. And because of that, it forced collaboration. And a lot of organizations have a lot of silos. And so I had that mentality coming here. David's always had that mentality. You know, the guy's launched franchises. You know, his father launched Vancouver and Philadelphia. He launched Calgary and the Predators. You know, so when you launch a franchise, you have to look at all facets of everything. And I think, I mean, we both had that view. It was natural to really enjoy working together. And you know, we've had some pretty big high moments. We still have one more to hit. But working with David's special. It truly is.
Did you have a moment like when you took this job and you knew you were going to be coming here to Nashville where you go, I get to work with David Poile? Like that kind of hit you of because you at that point, I mean, you knew his history. What he had done with Washington and then obviously here, was that a little bit of a pinch yourself moment?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and you know, it's funny, I heard you guys talking earlier about a question that the Titans new GM asked in the interview. I don't know how you got the question, but I remember I did the same thing once. I was asked to come talk to an owner about a job, and I wasn't that keen on it to begin with, but it was kind of returning home. It could have been a really cool thing. And I asked the question. I said, look, I'll be the fifth guy in this position in 7 years. Why is that? And he went crazy. I mean, he just started screaming and yelling, stormed out, offered me the job, which I still think is so bizarre. And I remember just walking away thinking, you can't work for people that you don't admire. And Bill Davidson, the old owner of the Pistons, who is probably the greatest owner in the history of sports, remember once said to me, always work with and for people that you want to be around, that you're proud of. And when I got the call for this job, you know, I was consulting for a few different teams, the Lightning being the main one. I was enjoying life. I wore shorts every day. I was coaching all my kids' teams. And I really thought this is it. You know, this is where I'm going to stay, and it's going to be awesome. And, you know, I met Tom Seger and Herb Fritch and the ownership group, all guys you admire and you want to be with. But in the back of my head, the main reason This was really exciting, much more so than even their vision and passion and dedication for this team and the city, was David Poile. Because every time you were in a room with David prior to coming here, he was like this magnet where everyone else revolved around. You know, you see these Hall of Famers, former players, that would literally sit there, wait to talk to him and ask for advice. And it's he's always been on the rules committee. He's always been one of the leaders in that room. So, yeah, I mean, coming to work with David was one of the biggest selling points. You combine that with great owners, and I really thought this could be a dream job. And fortunately, one of those things I was right on, because it's been the best 12 years of my professional career.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking to Sean Henry, the president and CEO of the Predators. One thing that, David and I also talked about was Michael McCarron returning from the player assistance program that is, I believe, a wonderful program that the league and the Players Association have, where they can help players when they need it. Michael going to play a little bit in the AHL with the Admirals, hadn't been on the ice in a couple of months. David did a good job of explaining that. But how, you know, we all go through things in life, and I think sometimes people forget that athletes are people too, and they all have things that they go through. How wonderful of a program is this to help these players? Because we've seen it across the league, not just with the Preds.
You know, we talk about our partnership with the players a lot, and you know, it came through some pain, you know, the losing the season, the 04-05 season. But in the end, what it's come down to is we really have a business partnership, and that transcends into starting with the people first. And out of that, we were able to create this program where the players and the people and people in the organization come before the team or the league, and can't achieve that without great trust. And every time a player goes into that program, on one hand, you know, you hope for them and you pray for them. But the other, you're really excited about one more person feeling confident coming forward because of the vision of the PA and our league, and then all the teams support it. And, you know, we've had a few players since I've been here go through the program and come out of it successfully, still. And I know it's every day is, a fight, if you will. But there are so many good stories that come out of it, so it's hard not to get excited. Again, you wish no one went into it because they didn't need to, but it's great that it's there. And I give Michael so much credit for throwing his arm up and saying, hey, this is what I need to do. And I love that he's going down to Milwaukee. He'll be able to condition and ideally come on back up when the timing's right.
Well, Sean, we can't let you leave us without asking you about your New York Giants, a big one in Philly this weekend. How do you think it's going to look? Listen, I called the upset early this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. I think they beat the Eagles in Philadelphia.
Well, a couple things. I don't like calling it an upset because we're favorites in my heart anyway.
Okay.
And, you know, the New York football Giants have never lost three games in one season to the same opponent, and it's never going to happen. And everyone knows, I mean, I really do love some of the players of the Eagles past that we used to play against. You know, I loved Harold Carmichael and Montgomery, and I absolutely loved Jaworski and Cunningham. But I hated the logo so much. There's not one team in Philadelphia that I can stomach watching. And beating them has always been the best part, especially when they were a pretty good team in the 80s and we were starting to become a good team. So what we're going to do to them tomorrow night is going to be so much fun. And I'm going to sit up in the PA perch with Big Paul and just ridicule him the entire game. So if he misses goal calls or 1 minute left to play, it's because I am next to him, heckling him the entire game, because there's nothing better than watching a Philly team lose with a Philly fan.
Oh,
we love it. We love it. That. Good luck this weekend.
You too, man. This is America's team playing, not the one with the stars. We wear red, white, and blue for a reason.
Hey, I'm just going to say this. I want an NFC championship game that's Cowboys-Giants. Like, that would be – I don't know if you and I could speak for a week, but it would be fun.
I think it would be awesome because I would see you cry afterwards too. Because almost as good as watching an Eagle fan cry.
It's watching a Cowboys
fan. Star. I mean, the funny thing is, Cowboys fans are so arrogant. And you look at them and you think, okay – Chase, I don't know what year you were born, but I don't think you ever remember the Cowboys winning a Super Bowl. Is that correct?
Oh, I do. I totally remember.
Oh, how old were you?
The last one I was 8. That I remember.
Don't even remember. You were playing with Tonka trucks in the backyard, and your dad had to tell you that they just scored. And you were trying to figure out who Emmitt Smith played for.
No, I had a jersey.
Chase just heard him say, "We're going to Disney World."
I had an Emmitt Smith jersey. That was my guy.
Hey, remember one thing. The going to Disney was coined by who? Bill Sims. Mm-hmm. The greatest Super Bowl performance by quarterback ever. The dumping of the Gatorade was coined by who? Harry Carson, your New York Giants. All good things in football run through New York.
There you go. That is a good way to edit. Sean, appreciate it as always. We'll see you tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena.
Thanks, Sean.
Yes, sir. See you, Michelle. See you guys tomorrow.
Awesome. Thank you. That's Sean Henry, the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators, joins us every Friday at 9:15 here on the program. Coming up next, there are 10 offensive coordinator positions open around the National Football League, including the Tennessee Titans. How appealing is that one? We'll discuss coming up next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Now, Tim Kelly's a little different. He's only been here a year, you know, so he has some things that he could say. Well, my, you know, hey, I wouldn't have done it this way. I would have done it this way. You know, moving forward, maybe the moving forward type thing. This is how I see this.
But see, that pisses me off, too, because then I'm like, why didn't you just hire him and fire Downing last year?
Well, that's a different question. Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about from Kelly's perspective. Kelly's perspective is, you know, he was the pass game coordinator, and he, I'm sure he had a lot of ideas. And there's only one ultimate play caller on game day, and that was Downing. And, you know, the process in and of itself from Monday through Saturday night going into Sunday could have been great. I mean, I've been a part of those teams. I would say the team that I was a part of this year, our process was outstanding, how we approached things, the work together, the communal attack, and you know, everybody working together and doing their job within the framework of the defensive staff. But on Saturdays, we just didn't get the product that we'd hoped. And you know, maybe Tim, you know, again, the relationship piece between Tim Kelly and Mike Vrabel is clearly there. The relationship piece between Tim Kelly and Charles London is clearly there. And I think that there's a, like I said, I think there's a comfort level with Coach Vrabel moving forward with those people.
Coach Bob Shoup with Stillman & Company talking about Tim Kelly as the Titans OC. Back here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezovic here with you. Reporter Nick Keyser on the ones and twos on this Friday. So how attractive is this offensive coordinator position for the Tennessee Titans? Now, I got a couple different ways to look at that. I would say right now, today, it's not very attractive because you look at the offensive roster and go, woof. Mm-hmm. Especially the offensive line. But Rand Carthon is now going to be in charge of fixing that alongside Mike Vrabel. You know, the offensive coordinator that comes in will know that the head coach is going to have more say on the personnel. And so to me, that makes it a little more attractive that, you know, this is going to be a collaboration to fix everything. So I think that probably helps it. Now, there are a lot of job openings for OCs around the league, 10 total right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Greg Roman stepped down as the OC in Baltimore. I heard TD get asked this morning, Tyron Davenport get asked this morning about, you know, would he want Greg Roman here? And he said that's a big no. And I agree with that. I just don't think that offense would work with the personnel here. And, you know, you need to have more. We're trying to get away from just run, and have more of a passing game. Greg Roman wouldn't do that.
Well, and, you know, a lot of people think, you know, people don't want to play with Lamar Jackson. That was kind of the, I don't want to say rumor or maybe assumption of why a lot of, you know, electric wide receivers haven't wanted to go to the Ravens. And people always have the, well, Lamar can't throw. Well, yes, he can. He also runs as a quarterback, but RG3 had an interesting tweet yesterday about Greg Roman, and he said, Greg Roman may be one of the greatest run game tactics I've ever been around at the NFL level. Running backs, tight ends love his system because they eat. Wide receivers absolutely hate it. That's why free agent wide receivers didn't want to go or stay in Baltimore. It never was about Lamar Jackson. So, you know, that also could, I mean, I know he just stepped down from the Ravens, but that also could have played a part in, you know, Lamar's, you know, likability in being in Baltimore, and does he want something different, right? Does he not want to be known as just the running quarterback? So it'll depend on who the Ravens are hiring. The Buccaneers also have an opening at OC. Chargers, Commanders, Titans, Rams, Jets, Patriots, Colts, and Cardinals.
Mm-hmm. And you know, some of those also have head coach openings. So, you know, they'll obviously hire the head coach and then figure out the
so
staff.
Colts and Cardinals.
Yep.
And I think that's it.
Yep. So I'm curious on it for sure. Coach Shoup, and I'm actually going to be co-hosting Stillman & Company with Coach Shoup on Monday, so looking forward to that. But I think that he, you know, to bring up Tim Kelly and that dynamic, we all go back to, hey, maybe they need to bring in somebody from the outside. Well, they just did that with GM, which I was pleasantly surprised by. So I think that is a great thing. Vrabel likes his people. He likes people he has a connection to. Tim Kelly has a connection to. But Tim Kelly is coming from, you know, is from the outside.
He is.
He was with Houston. Now he's with that, you know, Bill O'Brien, Patriots, you know, that crew. But he still at least has been outside. I still would love, you know, I think Matt Nagy would probably be my number one choice, even though I don't. You know, I haven't seen reports that he's actually returned the call.
Yeah, I don't even, which is really interesting to me. He hasn't even responded yet. I don't know if he's just, hey, I'm locked in on the game. Like, I'm not responding to anything.
Yeah, he might be.
But, yeah, definitely a little bizarre that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how uncommon that really is this time of year, but especially, like, if you're a team that's still in the playoffs. But I would at least say, hey, can we talk when – you know,
yeah, that's what I mean. Hey, focus on, like, listen, let me just see how far we get in the postseason.
Yeah, and I would think that right now, Vrabel, he knows he's got a little time. Mm-hmm. You know, now they probably want to have somebody in place for the Senior Bowl, you know, to with that.
I agree.
But you still got a couple weeks before that happens. So, but, you know, if Vrabel speaks today, I know he's going to be asked about it. That is, you know, hey, where are you at on OC? Is Tim Kelly the front runner? But I kind of go back to, and I ended up being wrong on this, but if he was going to hire Tim Kelly as the offensive coordinator, don't you think he would have done it already? I mean, if that was, if his mind was made up.
I mean, how long did he take to actually name Shane Bowen the defensive coordinator?
A year.
That was before I even got there, but I remember.
Oh, that was.
That was huge. Like, he just took forever to name him, even though he was it. He just never named him.
The Vrabel and a certain media member kind of started with that because it just and rightfully so. I mean, it kept coming up of why won't you put the damn title on him? And Vrabel kind of went on this like, you guys care too much about titles; they don't mean anything. And it's like, no, they
actually kind of do.
Could
we see a 2.0 with this with that?
Have
I mean, why hasn't he named it? Just because maybe he's just like, I don't need to do it yet.
I think he knows he made a mistake. He'll never admit that, but I think he knows that it was a mistake because it was detrimental to Shane to not have that title and to basically, you know, everybody was like, well, he's calling the defensive plays. He's the de facto defensive coordinator, but he doesn't have the title, so it's like, who am I listening to? Am I listening to Vrabel or am I listening to him? Like, so I think it was detrimental. And then he did it, and you saw him really take off. Now, they brought Jim Schwartz in to kind of be an advisor, which I think that was a good move. You know, I'm curious of what Bowen and the defense is going to look like now that Schwartz is gone as the defensive coordinator of the Browns. I don't think he does that again. I think if he doesn't bring anybody in from the outside, then Tim Kelly will be named the offensive coordinator. I think that title would be given to him.
Yeah.
And it's different now, too, because Tim's been an OC. You know, that's Shane was never a DC. Tim Kelly has been an offensive coordinator.
Well, and that was my whole – I, from the beginning, have really thought that Tim Kelly is the front runner for this offensive coordinator position. You know, we talked about he wanted to hire him before he hired Todd Downing. And he couldn't because he didn't get permission from the Texans. Yep. That offense with Davis Mills actually started to look like things – like that was the one seed year – for the Tennessee Titans, right? This was Tim Kelly. Yeah. So that was the one seed year for the Tennessee Titans. I remember they played the Houston Texans the last game of the year, and that offense actually looked, you know, it looked put together. I mean, you had a Davis Mills at your quarterback, and that didn't look like a crappy Houston Texans offense.
Didn't have the horses, but didn't look incompetent either.
Yeah, he put together, you know, an offense able to execute, mm-hmm. which was big for that team because they didn't have a quarterback and they had misfit guys out there. And this Tennessee Titans team was fighting for a one seed. And then to come in here, you know, behind Todd Downing, I don't know why he was named passing game coordinator. And maybe Mike was like, I want Tim in the building.
You just set this up perfectly. Because I have a major question that I don't know the answer to, and I don't know if I'll ever know the answer to when it comes to Tim Kelly. And we'll ask that next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. You can hit us up on our phone line, driven by WilsonKennyHyundai.com. We're broadcasting live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studio. Here at 102.5. Joe Rexroth going to join us in about 15 minutes. He's going to come in. We'll talk about Rand Carthon. But with the offensive coordinator, here's my question on Tim Kelly. And this is what we don't know, and we probably will never know. He's brought in to be – why was he brought in to be the passing game coordinator? It's a great question. What did that mean? Because I don't think we ever truly knew what that meant.
No.
You know, I was the one that put it out there. I was told, hey, this is the job that he's going to be doing. And I asked then and the rest of the season of, great, what does that mean? Does that mean that he's collaborating with Todd Downing? Does that mean he has more of a say on the passing game? Like, what exactly does that mean? Because I'm like, I could coach the run game for this team. I don't think you really need help there. Hey, Derek, that way. Give the ball to Derek, that way. You got it. You know, it's like LeBron James, roll the ball out there.
Yeah.
But what exactly was that? And how much of last year's offensive woes were on Tim Kelly? You know, does Tim Kelly have a hand in that? And Vrabel saw, okay, there's some things that he wanted to do that we did that didn't work. Now, granted, we know the injuries and, you know, A.J. Brown wasn't here and all of that stuff. But I think that that is certainly worth asking of, okay, was this all on Todd Downing, or did Kelly share some of the blame? And now he's like, look, we might keep Tim as an assistant, but we're going to get another OC.
You know, I think that's interesting because throughout the season, whenever we would have people, you know, texting in, calling in, blaming Todd Downing for the offense, and then, you know, after the Green Bay game, it was, that was probably the best the offense has looked. It was always, well, it's Todd Downing's fault, it's Todd Downing's fault, it's Todd Downing's fault. But then when something was good, it was like, that was Tim Kelly. It wasn't Downing, right? People were very set in their ways. And unfortunately, though, Todd Downing, when you hold the role as the offensive coordinator, the entire offense falls on you most of the time. But, you know, we heard from Bob Shoup earlier. We played a clip of his on Stillman and Company yesterday, and he said, you know, at the end of the day, Todd Downing was the one play calling out there, right? He was the one every game calling plays. Wasn't Tim Kelly, whether he had, you know, a role in giving some call, like we don't know what his role was.
You know that for sure, though, that it was always Todd Downing.
I mean, from watching him, yes.
And you're right. I think he called the play in, but I've wondered about that too. Of how much was Vrabel saying no, not that play, or Tim Kelly was like, hey, let's do this.
But you don't have time to do that for every play.
You don't
in the NFL.
You don't. But I do kind of think, based on some of Vrabel's answers, that there was some of that going on.
I disagree. I mean, you literally do not have time. I get, you know, Vrabel saying, okay, if we're in this situation, like, this is what I want to do. And I think when he said things like that in the press conference, you know, like, like I play a role in it or whatever his direct comment was on it was more of him being like, well, I'm the head coach and I approve everything. But if we're realistically looking at it, and I would love to get Joe's take on this too when we have him on at 10, he doesn't have time in the middle of a game to veto or approve every play call.
Yeah, and you're right. I think I should clarify. I wonder how much of like, okay, there's a series, and Mike goes to Todd Downing on the sideline and go, hey, I hated that. Like, you called these plays. I think in this situation we need to do this, this, and this. And there's just a lot of second-guessing. Maybe second-guessing is the better way to put it, in-game, but not in that moment.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get that, but I feel like a lot of times, too, you know, he'll even stand up and say, you know, that was a bad play call, but, you know, in-game, they can't focus on those because they need to focus on maybe during halftime, hey, like, these are the adjustments we need to make. Well, Peyton Manning ruined all of our halftime speech things we thought that was happening. But even just the coaches talking of, like, hey, like, this didn't work. Like, what can we change, you know, for the second half? But I feel like in-game, Vrabel's he doesn't have time to – and listen, I've never been a head coach, right? But just by watching on the field and watching, you know, where the coaches are, you know, calling plays, different things like that, like, he doesn't have time – like, while they're playing, to go back to Todd Downing and be like, hey, I didn't like this, this, and this, because the game is still going on.
Right. I don't know. And like I said, we'll never know.
I mean, in practice, yeah.
We will never know the true dynamic of how things work with the Mike Vrabel Tennessee Titans, because he doesn't want us to. And that's fine. That's his prerogative. I mean, if I was in his spot, I wouldn't want everybody to know everything. I mean, that's part of being a head coach and playing things close to the vest. Now, he's got some tells. I mean, you know, they'll show him on the sideline, and you can tell when he's mad that something didn't work.
Oh, for sure.
You know, that he's got the great, like, just, you know, arms crossed and just kind of the eye roll without doing the eye roll that I just crack up every time I see it. Like, this look, you watched Friends, right?
I've seen episodes, yes.
Really?
I thought the whole thing.
Okay.
I need to. It's on the list.
So there was an episode, you know, Joey's an actor, right?
Yes.
And so Joey is teaching an acting class, and one of his methods is called smell the fart acting, he's basically saying, like, you kind of look like you're smelling a fart, and that gives you, like,
it's the side eye.
Yeah. Vrabel has that look. On the sideline sometimes.
Oh, on the sideline. He has it in a press conference. Like, it's funny. You can tell, and he will immediately go to that face of if he doesn't like something.
Yeah.
Doesn't like a question. You can see it. I love when I'm at the games in the press box, but then you have the TV up there, the TV broadcast, and you can see the close-ups of the faces.
Oh, yeah.
Or when Vrabel did the iconic flag drop, like a mic drop.
Yeah.
Oh, it was great. The sass is... unreal.
I like the one where he basically chucked it at the ref.
Oh, that, yeah, the gif, that one's
that's
out
a good
there
one
too.
Like, yeah, you're really making me do this.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Listen, if you're gonna throw the flag, you might as well make people see it.
I want to see him punt it. I think that would be funny.
Yeah, but if he missed it, that'd be tough. If he, like, dropped it and missed it.
I'm laughing at Caroline Fenton just sent us a text. Thank you, Caroline, for listening. I am assuming that, actually. She said, do you assume every 25-year-old girl watches Friends? And I said, yes. But I watch Friends. I mean, I love Friends.
You are 25. No, I'm kidding.
I'm a 25-year-old girl. That's me.
You are going to Taylor Swift soon.
I am, front row. But, no, it was also my, you know, generation that I grew up in that. So, you know, I get it. But I thought everybody, like, watched Friends on TBS now. It's an iconic show.
Listen, there's so many seasons, and Joe Rexroad already has, like, a list of movies and shows that I need to watch, and that's on there, and I'll get it. I'll get to it at some point.
You would like it.
I know I would.
It fits you.
Yeah.
You know, it fits everybody.
Why? Because I'm 25 and a girl?
Yes, but it's a fun show. That's why.
Okay, that's fair.
It's it, you know.
And there's a lot of seasons, so. A
lot of seasons. 10 seasons, you know, so. Maybe Mike Vrabel likes Friends. Let's just ask him that today. Let's just ask him stupid questions like that. Like,
Rand,
Mike,
congratulations.
Do you like Friends?
That sounds like, do you like the show Friends?
Yeah, do you like the show Friends? What character are you? Are you more of a Chandler or a Ross or a Joey?
He's like a Rachel. He's fierce.
Yeah, there you go. Rachel Karen Green. Coming up next, Joe Rexroad going to join us in studio. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans presser today here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Less chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.